And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everyone. Howdy. All right. It's great to be back. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics on Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. I am your host and sensei, Gary Matuta. I love that ad they've been running. Yes, the dojo is headed out to the West Coast. So those who live in Southern California, don't forget, February 20th, mark it on your calendar. We're going to bring the dojo to the historic Sacred Heart Chapel there in Covina. And I'm going to give you a talk. It's going to be one of the most important talks that I give on apologetics. And, I want to talk a little bit about that. It's just I don't want to disclose everything. We got to build up some anticipation, but it's going to be a great talk. I actually gave an entire seminar based on this method for Catholic productions. So if you go to GaryMatuta.com, you can access the goodies there from Catholic Productions. And it's tradition necessary. But the core of that whole talk is this insight that I'm going to give for breaking the Bible barrier on February 20th. So it'd be great to see everybody if you can. And, like I said, there's never a bad time to engage in apologetics, learn more about the faith, have more reasons to know and love Jesus. And we got a very interesting show in store for you today. What is the most important and effective way to explain and defend the faith? Are explanations the only way that we can correct errors? Why am I asking all these questions? What day is it? It is Tactical Tuesday, everybody. And so we're going to talk about some apologetic tactics, if you will, just ways of explaining, defending the faith. And since I'm asking all these questions, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about the Socratic method and, all the benefits of using questions to answer questions. And so this is going to be kind of fun. We're just going to look at the Socratic method today. And there's a lot more going on when you're asking questions than meets the eye. So I think that'll be fun to explore that area. And as always, we do our exercises. We're going to do the finding the fallacy for today. And the finding the fallacy is the incomplete comparison. It's also, by the way, a kind of mirrors that of a propaganda technique misuse of relative terms. And we're also going to meet an early church father today that I bet probably 99.9% of everyone listening has probably never heard of. It is Paulus Orsius. Paulus Orsius. Yes, not exactly a household name, not even for people that are into early church fathers. But that's why we do this segment, because it's always cool to listen to and learn about the great Christians that have gone before us, and also those who have contributed to our knowledge of theology. So Paulus Orsius, as you can tell, it really just rolls off my tongue. And as always, you are part of the discussion if you want to join, and maybe you have a comment or suggestion, or maybe even better, if you maybe you're in an instance where you're at work and coworkers are asking questions, or maybe family members, you're not really sure what to do as far as maybe evangelize or give defenses. You can give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Or you can always email us at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And the email goes directly into the dojo mailbox. And like I said, usually every week or so, I'll open up the mailbox and we'll talk about the questions. But I always reply either way. So you will get a reply. Whether or not it ends up on the show, that's a different question to ask. So So that's it. I'm trying to think, is there anything else on the docket? I don't believe so. So, well, without further ado, why don't we jump into the finding of the fallacy, which is the incomplete comparison. An incomplete comparison basically occurs when two things are compared when they're not really related, or perhaps a comparison is made but you don't know what the referent is to. For example, and this, by the way, this particular fallacy is also a propaganda technique where they'll use comparative terms but they won't tell you what it's being compared to. And there's just something about human nature that there are certain catch slogans that we're attracted to and we think favorably of. For example, if you had two products in front of you at a grocery store and one of them was 50% less fattening, that would probably be more attractive to buy that than the one that isn't or doesn't claim such a thing. Or, 100% new design or 75% improved formula, right? All those things are very attractive. And if we had a choice between the two, naturally you'd want to pick the one that's 50% better, right? But guess what? The problem there is 50% better than what? It doesn't say. Maybe it's the pancakes are 50% better than a handful of nails. That's not necessarily a good thing. Or 50% less filling or less fattening. Well, less fattening than what, right? Because comparison or relative terms only make sense when you know what they're relative to, right? So the fallacy of incomplete comparison is basically where a comparison term is made or a claim is made that basically either doesn't have a referent or it's comparing two things that are completely unlike. Okay, so they really can't make a comparison. Now, the power of this fallacy comes from the fact that it can't be refuted. I mean, if someone says that brand X Pop-Tarts are 50% better, you know, how can you refute it if you don't know what is 50% better than? And by the way, you know, this was a very popular strategy used when I was a little kid, probably even before that. But there has been some legal changes where you can't make such claims without actually telling people, you know, giving the stats and backing it up. So it's not used quite as much as it used to be. But still, people can use it in arguments. It's just something good to know, right? So, oh, you know, I knew I forgot something. And, you know, I turned my head and I saw the part of the dojo, the live feed. So I didn't even give my shout-outs today. Shout-out to those watching on live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hi, everybody. yes, 3 out of 4 dentists recommend it, right? Well, I would say 3 out of 4 apologists recommend hands-on apologetics. Or, you know what, let's use the fallacy, and we will say that hands-on apologetics is now 50% better. How about that? In fact, why don't we make it 100% better? All right. Well, I can tell you what, just the fact that you're with me, and especially those on live stream and YouTube, and you know, it makes it even better. So I can say that. All right. Let's jump to the Meet the Early Church Father segment. And like I said, it's an obscure father, but you know, it'd be cool to know these people. It's Paulus Orsius, who flourished roughly about 415 AD. Now, Orsius was generally is understood to be a Spanish priest, although we don't know really where he's from. Chances are he's likely from Braga, which is in Portugal. He was fleeing from the Vandals, and he came in 414 to the city of Hippo in North Africa. Now, we know Hippo is famous for the Bishop of Hippo, St. Augustine. And where he met Augustine, and he showed him his work. And I'll translate this from Latin, everybody, so I don't butcher the Latin. His commentary concerning the errors of Priscillianism and also Origenism. So he wrote this apologetic work that kind of tears these heresies apart. And he asked Augustine if he could use this outline of errors for a major refutation, which Augustine did. in his reply to Orsianum. So it's kind of cool. You know, he kind of presents an outline to the great doctor, and the great doctor obliges, and now we have an awesome refutation of this heresy. Now, Augustine recognized his abilities, scholarly abilities, and he sent him to Bethlehem in 415 to consult with another great saint of the church, Saint Jerome, and who, of course, is living in a monastery, or actually, kind of almost like a hermit in Bethlehem. And he consults Jerome on the question of the origin of soul, and likewise to warn Jerome about Pelagianism, which had lately gone into Palestine. At Bethlehem, the Syrian same year, he also wrote a book called his Apology. It was less than a year there in Palestine that he left, intending to return back to Spain. But unfortunately, reports of wars and barbarian atrocities in Spain kind of frightened him off, and instead went back to Hippo with Augustine. And at Hippo, he wrote his best-known work on the history against seven books against the pagans. Around 418, we don't hear from him anymore. He just kind of disappears from history. Whether he died in Africa or whether he made it back to Spain, no one knows. But it's interesting to see this particular early church father. I wish I was back then. If you imagine rubbing elbows with the likes of the great Saint Augustine and Saint Jerome, be kind of cool beans. Except I don't think I'd like the hordes of the Vandals, pagan Vandals. That would be bad stuff. All right, stay tuned, everybody, and we'll talk about the Socratic method next. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, Hands-On Apologetics. Apologetics, by the way, doesn't mean saying you're sorry for being Christian or being Catholic. It means giving a defense or an explanation. And so that's what we're doing. We are talking about how to explain and defend the faith with charity, clarity, and competently. So, you know, a few days ago, I mentioned that I'm coming to Covina on February 20th, and I noticed in the forum on the YouTube live stream. Now, this was a few days ago that someone asked whether or not I'm going to have my books there. So, you know, and I believe I had a guest, so I couldn't answer that question. But since, you know, it's Tactical Tuesday, I'll bring that up, by the way. Yes, I'm going to bring all my books and the CDs. Everything's going to be there. In fact, I'm going to even have some books that are out of print that you won't be able to get anywhere else. So there's just another little inducement. So if you live in Southern California, bring your friends, bring your family, especially if you're interested in defending the faith, and join us at Sacred Heart Chapel, will you? If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 888-526-2151. And our discussion today, what is the most important and effective way to explain, defend the faith? Are explanations the only way you can correct errors? Why am I asking questions? Because it's Tactical Tuesday, everybody. I'm going to talk about the Socratic method. You know, asking questions. You know, this may seem kind of mundane and boring, but actually there is a lot behind this technique. In fact, you know, I've been doing apologetics, explaining the faith, doing talk seminars, talking one-on-one, debates, everything. And I've come to realize that perhaps the most effective thing you can do when you're talking with someone is to ask questions. In fact, I teach apologetics for Homeschool Connections. It's an online show. It's online school for middle school, high school age kids. And for my middle school kids and even my high school kids, we practice asking questions. Like, I made that part of the core curriculum. Why? Because I have come to realize that a single question is worth more than two or three paragraphs of statements. Okay. It is just so powerful. So let's unpack that a little bit. Okay. First, why should we explain and defend the faith by asking questions? Well, one reason is because Jesus did so, right? Jesus didn't always give explanations. He more often simply asked questions, or when somebody asked him a question, he would answer with a question. And this is not just typical of Jesus. This is all part of this rabbi-disciple relationship. A good rabbi will never answer a question. He will always answer a question with a question. Okay. And so we know from Jesus that this is a very powerful way to engage people and also help them understand the faith. Let me give you an example. In Luke 10, verses 25 through 28. There was a scholar of the law who stood up, and to test him, he said, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And what did Jesus say? Well, he didn't give him a statement. Instead, Jesus said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And that's kind of interesting, isn't it? Jesus already knows how he reads the law. Jesus knows what's written in the law because Jesus is God's wisdom incarnate. You know, he is the law. But nevertheless, you know, Jesus knows the answer. But the thing is, the scholar of the law needs to learn it kind of for himself. Okay. So what does Jesus do? He answers a question with a question. First, what's in the law? Read it. And how do you read it? How do you interpret it? And he replied, quote, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your being and all your strength and all your mind and your neighbor as yourself." Okay, so good answer. Okay, and Jesus replies to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." Okay, so Jesus finally, you know, after asking him these questions, Jesus then gives him the advice, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live." And of course, we know as the paragraph goes on, it says, because he wished to justify himself, he said, "Well, who is my neighbor?" And then Jesus doesn't just give the answer, he gives a parable. But the point here is that, you know, this is a very Jewish way of explaining and defending positions is by asking questions, right? So the first reason we should do it is we imitate Christ, you know, imitation of Christ. If you're going to copy somebody, copy the best. And Jesus is the best of the best. He's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And so that's one reason, you know, it shows forth this wisdom. But there's now let's unpack that wisdom a little bit, okay? What does asking a question do? Well, I just asked a question. See, it's second nature for me. What does it do? Why is it important? Well, how many of you, when you're talking to someone who's not, maybe they don't have a faith or maybe they have objections to your faith, how many times do you feel like you're on the witness stand and the other person is like Perry Mason, if you remember the old series, and he's just pounding you with questions, and all you're doing is running from one topic to another, trying to reply. And it's basically you're just playing prevent defense, right? And I know a lot of people that they don't like to share their faith because that's kind of what ends up, that they're always on defense and they feel like, afterwards that they're kind of like a pinata, you know, and someone was smacking them with a stick. Well, how do you get out of being in the defensive mode and actually start helping people and get in an offensive mode? The answer, ladies and gentlemen, what is it? It's Socratic method. It's asking questions. I'm going to see how many questions I could ask during this broadcast. It's very important because when you start asking questions, suddenly you're no longer on the witness stand. Now they have to answer questions, right? Now they have to account for their beliefs. It's all the burden is on you. It's actually then for them, right? So asking questions prevents you from being, you know, on the witness stand, becoming a human pinata and yada, okay, I guess. It moves you on the offensive. It also puts you in control of the conversation because once you ask a question and you get a reply, then it's up to you to figure out, okay, where's this conversation going to go? For example, why do you believe that Mary had other children? Let's just use that. We can use anything. And they answer whatever. They give you three or four reasons why. Well, you can pick which reason that you feel best suited to kind of drill down into and talk about. And what you do is you ask another question along those lines. So it kind of puts you in the driver's seat. You can decide where the conversation's going to go and where it won't go, right? Another great thing about the Socratic method, asking questions, and this is kind of a sin that I think a lot of Christians, a lot of Catholics commit when they're defending, explaining their faiths, is that they assume that they know the other person's position. You know, when you're talking to a Baptist, you might know something about the Baptist faith, and so you think, okay, I know everything you know. I know exactly where you're coming from. The fact of the matter is that isn't true, especially within Protestantism. You can have someone who is a Baptist that may not agree with everything Baptists believe. Or you might have a Pentecostal and the same thing. Or, you know, take your pick. They might not. They might belong to that church because they like the pastor's teaching and they agree with, you know, 80-90% of it. But there's still things they don't agree. So don't assume that you already know what they believe. Asking questions is a great way to find out. For example, let me give you a real-life situation. One of the early people that I talked to when I first started engaging in Catholicism was a fundamentalist Baptist. And I kind of knew the Baptist faith. I kind of knew where fundamentalists were coming from. And I just assumed that because I knew that this person didn't believe in X, Y, and Z. Okay. Let's say the real presence in the Eucharist. And so the funny thing is when I was talking to him, I found out that actually the person did believe in the real presence, but he was a Baptist. And that was kind of weird because Baptists don't believe in the real presence. They believe in the symbolic presence. Actually, they don't really even believe in a presence per se. It's more just a symbol or a reminder. But this particular person actually, you know, because of reading scripture and God's grace, they realize that, you know, no, there is a kind of real maybe even substantial presence going on. So their belief was really much higher than the church they were attending. Now, if I didn't ask questions, I would have totally missed that point, and I could have spent a lot of time trying to argue things that, would have been worthless. Instead, since we had that common ground, it was more fruitful for me to kind of, pull that out a little bit. Okay, the real presence, what makes the real presence present, And then that would branch into the priesthood and authority and apostolic succession and stuff like that. But I would have never known if I just assumed, okay, this is Baptist, so X, Y, and Z, right? But asking questions helps you to understand exactly where the person's position is, and you can find areas of commonality that otherwise you would have missed. Okay, that's a great point in terms of asking questions, Socratic method. Another thing too, it's difficult to generate hostility when you're asking questions. That's another fear for Catholics. I know, I give lots of talks, given talks all over the United States, Canada, wherever. And one of the common fears is people say, I really love to defend my faith, but I'm a little scared. I don't want to start arguments. And the funny thing is, if you don't want to end up arguing in the bad sense of the word argue, shouting or whatever, a great way to do that is just to ask questions. People generally don't get angry if you're asking sincere questions, right? It shows that you care about what they think, right? When you ask somebody a question, that means you desire an answer from them. That means you respect them as a human being, as a person, as somebody intelligent that's worthy to be listened to. So I found that when you pepper your defenses with legitimate, sincere questions, that actually forms a greater bond of friendship than hostility. Right. And that's been my experience is over the years doing apologetics one-on-one with people and so on. I've actually had a lot of very good, strong friendships. Now, the person may never have come back or come into the Catholic Church or come back to the church. But nevertheless, because of, the Socratic method and asking questions and really caring what they believe, we've begun good friends. And I've had people tell me that if it wasn't for certain things, certain obstacles, that they would want to be Catholic. So Socratic method. There's a lot more to this, folks, than meets the ear or the eye. When we come back, I'm going to talk about how it affects people's brains and how they think. Don't want to miss it. Hands on apologetics.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. Well, there's some great conversations going on in the YouTube forum here. Ah, boy, if I would tempted to read some of these streams. One person said, you know, Gary, that's one of the reasons I stay at my cubicle and don't go in the break room because I end up arguing, trying to defend my Catholic faith. Yeah, I hear you. You know, I was, before I learned apologetics and really got into sharing and defending the faith, I was even worse. I wouldn't even go to the break room. I wouldn't stay in my cubicle. I would go to the men's room and stay in the men's room for the hour and then come back to the cubicle afterwards, hoping that no one would see me walk. That's how shy I was. But, you know, the funny thing is once you start knowing what the faith is and you have a sense of you have a sense of how to defend the faith and the material in that, it's funny, people stop asking you. So eventually, like everybody else will be in the cubicle, you could eat alone in the break room. But, you know, if you're ever stuck in that situation, ask questions. Don't, you know, if someone says, you know, why do you Catholics worship Mary? Just turn around as a question and say, why do you think we worship Mary? Right? And then they might say something and maybe you could kind of help them out. But I found, like I said, questions are so powerful, so powerful. Oh, yeah, I should thank you, Mr. Engineer, for sending me that message. There was a mistake on the commercial for my appearance at Covina. I'm going to be there February 20th. I know yesterday's commercial said February 4th, and that was a mistake. But I believe they corrected it. And that's an awesome commercial, too. I love it. You know, I've never been to the World Command Center there in Covina, California, the world headquarters, the powerhouse. I can't wait to visit the studio, meet everybody, including Mr. Engineer. Can't wait to meet you. And the talk also on the 20th. So I can't wait to meet anyone that is going to make it to the talk. But let's talk about questions in terms of the mind. Okay, questions force people to think in ways that they're not familiar with thinking. You know, the mind is a strange thing. It's able to, I don't know if you guys know this, but the mind is kind of like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. And to be more specific, the mind can kind of rewire itself to think more efficiently about tasks that are commonly used. That's called neuroplasticity. Okay. In other words, if you do something repeatedly, the brain's actually able to kind of wire itself so that it can more efficiently do things, maybe even without thinking. Okay. Now, that we learned that through neuroscience. And we have known this a long time in theology. It's the word we use in theology is called habituation. Habituation is where if you keep practicing a virtue, the virtue becomes easier and easier to do. It's just like, you know, if you practice vice, the vice becomes easier and easier to do, right? I think we've all experienced that. I wish I could follow. Yeah, I'm not going to look at the forums. For example, this is kind of funny, everybody. I've learned this lesson that I play basketball and, you know, I'm pretty tall. I think you kind of gather that from some comments that we've made on the network. I'm 6'8". I'm huge. And so I played center. And my main weapon was the hook shot. Of course, now that was, you know, now things have changed a lot in basketball, but that used to be a deadly way of shooting. And so I trained my left hand to do left-handed hook shots. And I did it so much, I practiced so much that when I first tried it, I could barely put the ball over my head. By the time I was done at the end of the season, I was actually a better shot with my left hand than my right hand. And more recently, you know, I like to make noise on a guitar. I don't play guitar. I make noise on it. But I decided I'm going to – I have this little three-quarter size guitar. I was going to teach myself – you know, I knew how to play, but I wanted to actually learn chords and play more songs. So I made a bet with myself. I wondered if I could teach myself five or six Buddy Holly hits on the guitar before I mastered a small, short treatise from Boethius. So for a few weeks, I had the Buddy versus Boethius battle going on. And I shared on YouTube, you know, where I'm trying all these songs, you know, the old Buddy Holly hits and learning on guitar. And at first, you know, it's hard to get your fingers in the right thing. There'd be these long gaps when you switch from chord to chord. And the same thing with Boethius. Boethius, I was reading the treatise on that God is one, not three. And it's a small but very dense read. And, you know, I had to read it several times before I could grasp everything that he was saying. So it really was a battle between learning the chords, you know, on these Buddy Holly hits and mastering Boethius. But, ladies and gentlemen, I actually did. In fact, the battle won. I have to admit, you know, who won the battle? Buddy won. Buddy Holly beat Boethius, but not by much. But the cool thing is, what started off where I could barely do all the chords, by maybe about a couple of months of practice, I can kind of make noise that sounds like, you know, music. Okay, I actually can do the chords fairly easy. And that's because of the mind. The mind has this ability to, or the brain, the physical brain, actually has this way in which it can process things more efficiently the more it's done. Okay? Now, why am I bringing this up? Well, when it comes to defending the faith, sometimes people are used to thinking a certain way. There's certain jargon. And what happens is their brains become very efficient in thinking a certain way, but it becomes atrophied in other ways. In other words, it becomes harder for it to exercise. This is especially true when you're dealing with coercive cults like Jehovah Witnesses, Mormons, things like that. That's especially true with them because everything is tightly packed, tightly regulated. And so they actually lose the ability to think critically. It becomes hard for them because everything is just passively received. They're not thinking through self-critically about the information that they're receiving because they're just bombarded with so much information, so many changes. Everything's constantly moving that they lose that ability. And so a way to counter that is to ask questions, okay? In fact, you will hear this from experts in counter-cult field, that some of the best things you can do is just ask a question, sit back, and let them think about it. And what you're doing is you're forcing their brains to exercise other cognitive abilities that they haven't used, that maybe have become atrophied. So questions is kind of like a physical fitness routine, if you will. It kind of opens up areas of thought that, like I said, if you haven't really thought about it, it can become atrophied. You know, certain critical skills could be atrophied. This, by the way, is what's behind a program that started within Protestantism and has become widespread and pretty effective. It's a pre-evangelical model called Alpha, okay? And I know there's a Catholic version of Alpha, and I don't want to get into all the nitty-gritty of it. But the whole premise of that program is simply to ask questions, to raise questions, and just not and have people just start discussing and thinking about God. A lot of people aren't there. You know, they don't think about God. They don't think about certain questions about God, at least not very much. So when people are invited into this kind of pre-evangelical program, they're just asked very, very, very basic questions. so their minds can kind of chew on it, you know, and think about these things. And like I said, that's just part of this psychophysiological development that goes on. So, see, the Socratic method does a lot more than just simply putting you in the driver's seat and preventing you from being on defense. It does more than helping you kind of figure out where the other position is, you know, how, what they believe, what they don't believe. It actually is good for them because it forces them to think about things that otherwise they wouldn't have thought about. And that's really important because that's evangelism, right? That's why just the simple question can unravel to an entire conversion. Just a little, you know, throwaway question. In fact, let me give you a story about, this is a Protestant counter-cult worker, and he was in New York at one of the tours they give. I guess it was around the so-called Hill Cumbora. And the tour guide is a, you know, a hardcore Mormon, you know, young person who's given the tour stuff a million times. And he raises his hand and he asks the question, you know, if there was a big battle here, how come they didn't find any Lamanite swords and shields? You know, where's all the stuff of the battle? And the tour guide, you know, kind of had a befuddled face and he kind of spouted out a standard answer. You know, I can't remember what he said the answer was. But later on after the tour, this fellow exchanged information with the tour guide and he kind of forgot about him. And he said several years later, the tour guide contacted him. And he said, you don't know me, you probably don't remember, but you were on a tour and we exchanged information. And he said, you know, that one question you asked me about the shields and stuff, that always bugged me. And, you know, over the years, I started digging into it and stuff. And he said, now, you know, I'm no longer Mormon. I've joined a Bible-believing church and so on. And so that just shows you the power of asking questions that you might not see the immediate effect. They might tell you something that, you know, doesn't sound like they were very much interested. But you never know, by God's grace, you know, that question is like a seed that's buried in the ground. And with God's grace, that seed can grow. And who knows, it could bear fruit in the future. So, you know, that's yet another great reason to ask questions when you're sharing Defending the Faith. All right, hear the music coming up when we come on the other side of the break. We're going to talk more about the Socratic method and probably some other things you haven't thought about. The benefits of asking questions. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. you can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking about questions. We're asking questions and the importance of questions. And we were just talking about how the brain has this ability to wire itself to be incredibly efficient. It's called neuroplasticity. And, you know, that means that sometimes our thinking can kind of end up in a rut. You know, it's easy to think a certain way, and it's harder to think in ways that we're not used to thinking. So, by the way, folks, that's why in this program we do critical thinking skills exercises like finding the fallacy and things like that. Because, you know, we want to be sharp. We want to think critical. So asking questions can help a person kind of exercise their critical thinking skills. And that can be gold. You know, just doing that alone can be very, very fruitful. But there's other things, too. There's other benefits to asking questions. For example, asking questions helps. In fact, I think it's probably the most important thing you could do to help diagnose a problem. Okay? Because in apologetics, what we do is we remove intellectual obstacles that prevents the person from embracing the fullness of Christ in his church. That's basically what apologetics does. It removes intellectual obstacles. Well, how do you know what the obstacles are unless you find out, right? How do you know? Because you got to ask questions. You got to find out, you know, what is the obstacle? And by the way, intellectual obstacles could be simply just misunderstandings, myths, maybe they misread scripture, maybe they're misinformed, maybe it's some sort of anti-Catholic legend they bought into. It could be all sorts of things, just bad reasoning. Those are intellectual obstacles. They have to do with the intellect, the mind, okay? But, you know, there's other obstacle that prevents embracing the fullness of Christ. And that obstacle I call moral obstacles. And moral obstacles aren't intellectually based, but they're more emotionally based. They're more matters of the heart. For example, someone may have had a Catholic who was mean to them as a child. Or maybe they got hurt in church, right? Maybe the priest was mean to them. Or maybe they have a lifestyle that is contrary to the teachings of the church. And so that's an impediment. You know, they don't want to give up their pet sin. And what's bad about moral obstacles is often people will mask them like as if they're intellectual, okay? Let's take the pet sin, because we're all sinners and we can relate to sin. It's easy for us to kind of rationalize our sinful behavior and come up with excuses why it actually isn't bad. It's good, right? I mean, we've all done that at least for a couple of seconds. You know, you have this urge to try to rationalize why you're doing something that's wrong, but you know your conscience is always there to tell you no, it's not right. But that's that moral aspect masks itself with, I don't have to go to church. Who says that the Catholic Church is true church? And it could they could throw up all these different obstacles that appear to be intellectual, but really you can knock down 100 of them and there'll be 100 more. Why? Because they're not really reasons why they're not accepting the fullness of Christ. They're excuses. Okay. So that's where questions become very important, because it helps you to determine whether this person's objection is intellectually based, like if you clear it up, they're move one step closer to embracing the fullness of Christ, right? Where you explain, no, we don't worship statues. No, we don't believe X, Y, and Z. And then they're grateful. They're like, oh, cool. You know, I always thought that you did. But if it's a moral obstacle and you're asking questions, what you'll find is like the question's just coming and you can answer 100 of them and that person doesn't seem anywhere closer to accepting the fullness of Christ. So questions is so important in terms of diagnosis, right? Just like when you go to doctors, right? The first thing, what did they do? Well, the first thing they do is ask you if you have insurance. Okay. The second thing they do is they take your vital signs, right? They take your temperature. They ask you questions. What's, you know, wrong? They take your weight. They do all this stuff. Why? Because they want to diagnose what's wrong with you. And then, of course, you go in the doctor's office and you wait there for an hour and a half. Then the doctor comes in and basically spends 2 seconds with you and then writes a script or does a treatment or something like that. You can't treat something that you don't know whether, you know, that's the problem. And that is where questions come in. When you're asking questions, always think to yourself, okay, is this an intellectual question or obstacle? Or is this a moral obstacle? And if it's an intellectual obstacle, what's the root of it? You know, what's the root of these problems? And then address the root. It's as simple as that, right? Also, it enables the person to think critically about their own position. And this is gold, ladies and gentlemen. This is really, I think, the main goal of defending and explaining the faith is to be able to help the person to view their own position critically. Okay? Because many times when people are attacking our faith, they really haven't really thought much about their own position. And, you know, and if you can get somebody to think about critically their own position, that's gold. I mean, that really helps a lot because, in a sense, you kind of have them do the heavy work, right? And you, how do you do this? You do this by asking questions. Because when you ask questions, you force them to think critically. It's like, yeah, why do I? Why am I insisting that it has to be found in the Bible in order to be something that Christ taught? You know? You know, things like that. Why do I assume that the books in my Bible are the only inspired works and that the so-called Apocrypha, the 7 books of the Deuterocanon, aren't? Things like that. You know, it gets them to think critically about their own position. And ultimately, that's what you want to do. You want to help them so that they can reassess where they are, right? And that's not only true with Catholic Protestant stuff, but it's true for anything, you know, atheist, for non-Christians. And so that's another awesome thing about asking questions. It helps them think critically about their own position. Now, here's an interesting one. It creates tension when the person's not being truthful. Okay, I want to give you a story, and this is a very interesting story. It seems like I'm picking on Mormons, so if there's any Mormon listeners, I'm not picking on Mormons, but it's just this kind of happened with some Mormon missionaries. A friend of mine was being visited upon by a pair of young Mormon missionaries, and I stopped by actually during one of their visits, and so he welcomed me in. And this guy is like, you know, he's a pretty hardcore Catholic, you know, a Shiite Catholic. He has no problem defending the faith. And so I knew there wasn't really any danger with him. But nevertheless, I sat in and I was listening to the conversation and I asked the Mormon missionaries a question. I said, well, you know, if the Book of Mormon is the most accurate, the most faithful book of scripture on the earth, then wasn't there, and I didn't even say there was, I just opened the question, but wasn't there changes? Wasn't the original Book of Mormon that Joseph Smith wrote, wasn't there lots of alterations, changes, things like that? And so I didn't even have to cite, you know, what they were. I just opened the possibility. And the one Mormon missionary, he was kind of like, he was the expert of the two. And he completely dismissed. He said, no, I looked into this. I studied this in detail. And he said a bunch of things that I knew couldn't possibly be true about him being on some sort of translation committee and all this stuff. And this guy's like 17. He's probably about 18 or 19 years old. There's no way, you know, they would have him on this committee. And he's like, and I attest that, you know, yes, there was maybe a little bit of punctuation, some misspelling, but that was it. That was it. You know, and I was thinking to myself, this guy's crazy. Because, you know, and this is available on the internet, and I actually, you know, for those who watch on the live feed, you can see it, that actually it's in the books behind me. I have a reprint of the original edition of the Book of Mormon, and you can compare the original to the Mormon edition today, and there are like whole paragraphs that have been deleted and changed, things added, meanings changed. I mean, there's some very substantial editing. Now, what was going on, and I knew what was going on, was this guy, this missionary, was engaging in what's called lying for the kingdom. In other words, according to their minds, I wasn't privy to the truth. So they lie. So in a sense, they can lie because it will be a benefit for me. You know, maybe I might get into the church by not knowing this information. But the thing is that by asking this question, what I did was I created tension for these missionaries, because they know what the truth is, and they know what they told me is a lie. Now, whether or not that's going to bear fruit, that's up for God to decide, right? Because I never saw them after that one-time meeting. But it creates a tension, because if someone is deliberately trying to deceive or lie or suppress information, asking questions will cause that little, you know, kind of a itch in the conscience, you know, that maybe that's kind of, I don't know why I have to lie in order to sell the truth, right? Yeah, that's square peg, round hole, right? So God can use that. And one way of doing that is to know your stuff and know the questions, which questions to ask, how to ask it. If I told them that, oh, there was all these changes and stuff, they might have known that, but by asking a question, it kind of created this tension, if you will, you know, between what they know in their heart is right and what they're commanded to do. You know, another cool thing about asking questions is with a little preparation, you can do this thing called backpedaling. And a while back, previous episode, I talked about this, where basically you, by asking questions, you can lead a person kind of just question, and then boom, right into a wall, right? If you know their theology and you know how they think and how they use scripture, you can use this backpedaling approach by asking questions to lead them into a corner, and then boom, they're confronted with something that they just can't answer satisfactorily. So that's it for Socratic method. There's probably even more benefits, but hopefully this will light a fire on you to when you're next time you're defending the faith, you know, pepper with questions, ask questions. It's very, very fruitful. So it's time. Unbelievable. Man, it flew to turn off the lights here in the Hands on Apologetics Dojo. Man, that was fun and it flew. Coming up next, you have the Terry and Jesse Show. High intensity talk, Catholic radio coming up at you. And for me, you know, I got shut down here, the Midwest Command Center. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to the program. And hopefully, you know, hopefully this does kind of light a fire for you. Start asking some questions. See what happens. God's in control. All right, everybody. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church, So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.